Let's just call this one episode 87. Hey, everybody, and welcome to episode 87 of the Tuesday Night Comics Podcast, brought to you by TuesdayNightMovies.com. I'm Billy, and with me, as always, is Dave.
Hey, guys.
Delightful Dave Tomko, as his name would appear if this was a 1960s Marvel title page.
Yeah, or if I was a male stripper.
Yeah, or Dash. You think you'd be delightful if you were a male stripper?
Yeah, I would delight all the ladies.
That would be your stripper name, Delightful. That's like, that would be like, you could team up with your former, Batman podcast co-host, Adam, and you could be the adorable Adam and the delightful Dave. Oh, here to, you know, if not knock your socks off, gently pull them down.
Hey, we take care.
Yeah.
We take care in our stripping.
Delightful Dave, adorable Adam, and careful Chris are coming at you.
Yeah. Don't worry. When we take off our clothes, they don't get wrinkly.
Oh, wow. I will join you as Bashful Billy. Now up covering himself on the main stage as Bashful Billy. Yeah.
There's probably some weird like fetish thing that people are like, that's a thing.
We
describe the thing, we don't even know it.
Yeah. We're going to get a whole bunch of new listeners because of this. And
yeah.
And next week, they're going to be disappointed.
Or in like 2 seconds when we start talking about comics.
No, don't spoil it for them. So not much in the news this week. I don't know if you saw, I kept trying to find links today to send them to you, but Disney is being very aggressive about taking them down. And that's... there's like leaked footage from Captain America Winter Soldier.
Oh, really?
Yeah. And there was no sound in the footage. Basically just showed Cap's group and Iron Man's group like running at each other. But you did see Black Panther in his full costume, and that costume looks amazing.
Oh, that's cool. I don't know. That kind of stuff. I never like looking at the leaked footage of things because I always feel like it's not what you're gonna get end. I mean, same with sometimes with like those, like when they leak like the costumes of people, and it's just like it's like somebody taking a picture off the side of the street, and you're like, that looks kind of crappy, and you're like, well, you didn't see it in special effects or like with, you know, whatever filters they have on the cameras, you know, once they Instagram it, basically.
Yeah. You want to put that through Hefe or Sunrise.
Right. And then you're like, wow, that's a really cool Captain America costume. Yeah.
Adjust that shadows level, maybe give it a little more contrast. Yeah. No, I know what you're talking about. And I agree with you, because I remember the first Wolverine movie, leaked early without the special effects in it, and they were like, you know, you could download it off the internet, and there were copies of the DVD floating around. And this was before the movie came out, and I made the mistake of watching it. And the first Wolverine movie, well, neither Wolverine movie are good movies, but to watch that first one without special effects, man, it is extra painful, because like you're seeing a lot of like wireframe special effects, you know, they're putting them as placeholders. And that wasn't too bad. Those were kind of laughable, but it really like it didn't help. Like a lot of, I feel like in a movie like that, the special effects help take away from like the subpar acting and story.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah. And that wasn't there. So it was just like, wow, I got a lot of time to focus on how bad this story is. And then the other piece of news, and this, I think this affects me more than it affects you based on our locations. And that's, that Bergen Street Comics, one of my favorite comic book stores in New York City, has announced that it is closing after 5 years.
Yeah.
And this is one of those stores that I like to call it like the new wave of comic book stores, geared to the new fan and the adult. Like, it's a store that didn't look like somebody's basement. You know, it was very well maintained. It had beautiful like wooden shelves. They had a lot of indie focus there, and would have indie signings, and you know, whenever they did a signing, they would call it a party, and they would pour like champagne and have beers for people if they wanted. And they were smaller, like intimate signings, so you're able to like talk to the creators, which was really cool. And that's where Michel Fife of Copra, he worked there for a while he was working on Copra. And they are, but so Bergen Street is continuing as Bergen Street Press because they are the ones who put out the Copra compendiums and also the Copra trade paperback. So they're, it looks like they're going to still continue as a press imprint, kind of like New England Comics, which was a comic book store, and then it started publishing in the Tick.
Right.
But yeah, this is definitely a blow to the New York City comic book landscape.
That's a bummer. I mean, I've my buddy Mike used to live by there, I was in there a couple times, and I went in there with you, and I would say it was very like little to no back issues, mainly trade paperbacks, but it was definitely friendly to the reader off the street who was like, hey, I used to like comic books.
Right.
What should I read?
And they were really good about like the thought of where they put things. So they put all the kids' comics at like kids' height. So they were, you know, they're like, if you wanted a Marvel Adventures comic, it was closer to the ground. If you wanted an Archie comic, it was closer to the ground. And it was also in the front of the store. So like it would be the first thing a kid saw when they walked in.
Right.
And that's a good point. Yeah, most of the store was like hardcovers and trade paperbacks. They got a regular supply of new comics, but they would just sell those at cover price until they sold. And things that didn't sell, they would end up in like quarter bins.
Yeah, the classic quarter bin.
Yeah, they're not a store that's big on like, you know, upcharging on back issues. I remember when people were speculating on like a lot of Walking Dead back issues, you could have walked in there and got a bunch of cover price.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, that's a bummer.
It is a bummer because it's a great store.
Yeah. I mean, I hope with the Bergen Street Press, I hope they're looking to maybe, do they do other comics other than Copra?
There's another comic called Revenger that is a self-published indie comic, available digitally on Comixology, unlike Copra. But they put out, and it's kind of like a Punisher type comic. And they put out a book called Revenger Armory, which was like a special edition. I think it was similar to like the Punisher Armory.
Yeah. Or was it War Room or something?
Yeah, something like that. It would like take you through like all his weapons and stuff.
Yeah. So, I remember those.
that's an exclusive through Bergen Street Press. Like, because Revenger is sold through Oily online, and that basically that site exists just to sell Revenger. And I don't even think they sell that issue. I think you have to go through Bergen Street Press to get that one.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So that's
amazingly,
cool.
No Flash or Arrow news this week.
There really hasn't been. We're gonna be starting the new seasons of some television series this month,
right?
But Flash, Arrow, iZombie, the CW shows, they don't premiere till October, the beginning of October, whereas like I think Gotham and Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. End of September, so end of this month we'll start getting the TV show. Yeah. So I think all the news that like they've been leaking slowly throughout the summer is kind of drawing to an end, just to make you, you know, excited for the TV show. Oh, speaking of which, did you watch Vixen?
I did watch Vixen. It was really cool.
Yeah, I mean it was cool like 5 minutes, but
yeah,
I don't know. I might wait till a bunch are out.
Yeah, it's funny because, you know, it was 5 minutes long and it was kind of like forgettable too. Like I think I have to watch it a second time.
Right. Yeah, they just kind of set her character up really quickly and then it's like done. And
I'm yeah.
Like, okay. But it's I was hoping when they were talking about this, I thought it was going to be like a half hour episode, you know.
Right.
But I guess it's going to be like an hour total. I might wait till a couple of them pile up and then watch them all.
Yeah, that's a good idea. I might do the same. Although it was good enough that I would be willing to like watch them as they come out.
Yeah, me too. It's me, you know. Yeah, I just felt like, so I couldn't, there's not a CW Seed app, and then you can't watch it on YouTube, or at least I couldn't find it on YouTube.
Right.
You have to go to CW Seed site. So I went to their site on my iPad, and then they're like, you can't watch this unless you download the app. So I download the app, and then I download the app, and then I watch it, and then I have to throw it up on the TV screen for like 4 minutes. And I was like, all of this for like 5 minutes.
And that's really funny.
And I like now it'll be a little quicker, but
right.
But
it's still annoying.
Yeah.
Like leaves a bad taste in your mouth.
Yeah. I was like, man, at least have it out on YouTube. I realize they need that. They're probably, you know, working off the advertising dollars and stuff like that. And they probably, I don't know how YouTube works or Hulu, but as far as ad revenue, well, I think Hulu, they can only like, they don't choose who the advertiser is. It's just like a revenue share type thing.
Right.
And then I'm not sure how YouTube works, but either way, it just, you know, as a user, like, I feel like they didn't really think it through. You know, I don't want to have like a zillion apps on my phone to watch something, you know?
Yeah, I get what you're saying.
So anyway, let's get to some comics, Billy. Okay. Let's get to some comics.
All right, let's play the 20. What are you buying this week, Dave?
All right, I am buying...
And for any of the new listeners who are here because, you know, we tricked them into listening to this podcast for the first time with how we started the episode with, you know, Dave and my stripper routine.
Yeah.
The 20 is basically where we decide how we would spend $20 at the comic book store this week, try to keep it to a budget, and... When we were kids and comics were like a buck or two, that was pretty easy. Now $20 doesn't get you much, so we only pick the things we are most excited about.
Right.
Yeah.
So I am going with Age of Ultron versus Marvel Zombies number 4.
They're really rushing this out.
Yeah. You know.
Didn't we just get number 3 last week?
Was it last week?
I think it was 2 weeks ago. Oh, was it 2 weeks ago? Okay, I thought it was last week.
We reviewed it last week.
Gotcha.
So, you know, but yeah, I think this is a final issue.
Yes.
Yeah. So, that's cool. I'm excited to see where it ends. I wonder if it will at all feed into Robinson's, new Marvel series. Why am I blanking on the name?
Scarlet Witch?
No. Though it might,
I don't know,
because Vision's in it, right? And so
that's a good point.
Wonder Man, yeah. But I was thinking, any of the characters in here might pop up in his the JLA, the Marvel Evil JLA Squadron Supreme. So he's writing that book, and they're just Squadron Supreme members from multiple different. Reality, so not one of them is from the same reality.
Yeah, that's true. So, it's like all their survivors of Secret Wars, it sounds like.
Right, but they're all like Squadron Supreme members previously, I think. So I don't know. We'll have to see. I'm interested to see where, you know, where these guys end up if they play a part in anything that happens in October, or was it just a cool series?
Yeah.
But being that he, you know, kind of took some threads from his Invader series, I wonder if we'll see anything else in what he writes down the line. Because I think, you know, if you follow him and like if you follow Hickman or if you follow Morrison, you know, their ideas and their characters kind of follow them along, you know?
Yeah, definitely.
Even loosely. So I'm really looking to finish out that series. After that, one of my other favorite writers, Jeff Lemire, has a new number one at Image called Plutona. And it has art by Emmy Lennox.
But not Annie Lennox.
Right. That's why I paused. I was like, don't say Annie.
That's funny.
So did you read, there's a preview out for it.
Oh no, I didn't know that.
The art's pretty cool. It doesn't give you much. You you just kind of go from different household to different household, and you're realizing that like superheroes are a thing in this world, and you're kind of getting the idea of what a normal person's relationship is to the superhero.
Oh, okay.
So there's not a lot of like, you don't get too much character. You get a little bit of each thing, but it definitely looks really good.
How long was the preview?
It was like 4 pages.
Oh, okay, cool.
But yeah, definitely check it out. It was cool. But obviously it doesn't, you know, it wasn't written like those sneak peeks that, you know, are meant to entice you to read the comic. In like, it gives you the DC sneak peeks where they did like 8-page like preview stories. It wasn't like that. It was, you know, an honest preview of the issue where it's like it picked 4 pages and then but it was good. Gotcha. And the description is a brand new heartfelt superhero series by Jeff Lemire and amazing newcomer Emmy Lennox. I still have a problem with that. I'm stuttering on it. I'm definitely excited for that. I love everything that Jeff Lemire does. So.
And do you like his independent stuff more or his superhero stuff more?
I like his independent stuff.
Gotcha.
Way more. I feel like some of his superhero stuff doesn't feel totally like him. Like his JLU run was okay. I didn't think it was him at his best. I liked his Green Arrow a lot. I thought his Superboy run was fantastic. That's where I think he's, you know, he's really great. But when he's drawing his own stuff, I feel like that's him at his peak. I really like, my favorite has been Sweet Tooth and Essex County. And if anybody has read any of his stuff, I feel like if you read Animal Man to some extent and Superboy, I feel like if you like those two, you would like his independent work.
Okay. That is also on my list. What else you got on there?
I'm also going to pick up This Damn Band by Paul Cornell and Tony Parker.
And that's from Dark Horse?
Yeah. And I had reviewed this book, I guess, a month ago when number one came out. And it's definitely, it's done as a documentary. Like the comic book is from the view of a cameraman doing a documentary on this fake band called Mother Father. And
is it like the same tone as like Spinal Tap or?
Yeah, totally. Okay. All those movies, like, you know, A Mighty Wind and any of that. It's very tongue in cheek.
Gotcha.
So basically you kind of just get introduced to all the band members and you realize that, you know, they're doing all of this, putting on a show of being devil worshipers for their 70s psychedelic kind of metal band, you know.
Right.
And at the end of the issue, Satan shows up and they're like, oh, crap. Like, what did we accidentally do? Because right. The whole time they're like winking at the camera and being like, yeah, you could cut that out because, you know, this is what's really going on. And so it's pretty funny. It gives you a chuckle in that, like, artists, like music artists being kind of like a tool. Right. And then doing that in that Spinal Tap kind of way, that documentary kind of way. And at the end with being like, you know, I think the description for the second issue is kind of great. The band Mother Father is starting to wonder if maybe the whole pretending to worship Satan thing wasn't such a good idea, especially after Satan himself comes around for a visit. And that's pretty much, that sums up the first issue where they're left. So I'm excited to read this. It was great art by Tony Parker. I don't think I've seen anything from him before, and I really, really liked it.
I read about, you know, Tony Parker doing the art for this, or like you bring it up, I'm like, the basketball player?
but yeah, so I'm psyched for that.
Nice.
So that's $4. So I've got two $4 books and one $3 book. And now I'm going for Omega Man number 4. And Green Arrow number 44. Both are DC Comics, part of their new DCU, as in YOU, relaunch. And I recently caught up with most of the Green Arrow run. I bought all the reduced price books on Comixology.
Nice.
As when Ben Percy, the new writer, took over, who I believe is a horror novelist, he really drove home that Green Arrow works out of Seattle, and it feels like a real city, much in the way that if you're reading Dr. Fate or Ms. Marvel, like, you feel like she's living in Jersey City, you feel like he's actually in Brooklyn, you know?
Right.
And I get that feeling from this book. And Tarantula is being introduced in this book, and it's a she, so I'm guessing it's not the original Golden Age version, who was kind of like the Spider-Man before Spider-Man.
Right.
But it's the very much an outlaw vigilante hero that was written by Devin Grayson in Nightwing.
Gotcha. And was the... Okay, yeah, I remember her.
Yeah. So she has a very similar costume to the original Tarantula.
Yeah. And the original Tarantula, was that a DC character even back then, or was that like a character they acquired at some point?
I believe it was a character they had back then.
Okay.
I could be wrong, but I'm pretty sure. In All-Star Squadron, Roy Thomas had like him as like create a kind of a love triangle with Johnny Quick, Tarantula, and Liberty Bell.
Right.
Way back in the early 80s. And then Omega Man, I just read the first issue, and it kind of reminds me of a very fantasy sci-fi political thriller, much in the way that Game of Thrones is. And I'm really excited to be reading this book. So as with Omega Man and Green Arrow, they're both $3 books, but I'll probably wait until they drop to a $2 on Comixology. But I'm in for these series. I'll be reading them until they stop.
Gotcha. Yeah, for some reason I keep forgetting that Tom King is writing Omega Man. It just seems like one of those properties that is the de facto like title that Dan DiDio writes every time there is a new wave of DC titles.
Right, because you could tell that Dan DiDio came from like the 70s Bronze Age, where he's like, right, oh man, yeah, no, I'm going to get on board writing The Outsiders or
OMAC,
yeah, like all those, like, kind of like, you know, those properties that weren't like true Silver Age. They kind of came around in the 70s, like pre-DC implosion. So yeah, I could see why you think Dan DiDio might be writing that. But I think Omega Man got pretty big in the 80s too, because that's where Lobo first appeared.
Yes, that is true. But it was always like a fringy title. And it's funny, when Lobo first appeared, he's nothing like Lobo as we know today, you know, before like Simon Bisley got his hands on him. He was like just a standard space villain in a jumpsuit with like, you know, like a pompadour. He had like Elvis hair.
Yeah, well, he was, I mean, at that point, he was meant to be a Wolverine like pastiche. Right.
Yeah.
And he really does look like a Wolverine pastiche. And,
yeah, he kind of looks like Wolverine in his, like, you know, the Char costume, the Fangs costume that he wore. don't know if you know.
Yeah.
That.
Yeah. And I think that, you know, he grew into like a character in the 80s that was like a pastiche of all those, or, you know, basically a satire of all the, what was like badass comics, you know, which was pretty funny. And then I think somewhere along the way, I think he just became like the badass guy.
Right. You
know? Like people forgot that it was played for laughs.
Right. Or
it was done tongue in cheek. And I mean, now I think, you know, the new version of Lobo is played straight, which kind of bums me out because I remember reading an interview with Jeff Johns and what he said he always did was he would go back to the first appearance of the character and see what that character was about. Even if it wasn't like, you know, the best written thing, you could still kind of get an idea of what made him click with the readers. And I think what made Lobo click was that he was, you know, like it was a funny character that was, you know, making fun of these guys. But at the same time, you know, I think he was like the Archie Bunker of comic books. for a lack of a better comparison, I guess. So it's kind of a bummer now that he's played straight, you know.
Right.
It would be awful if Archie Bunker was played straight in an All in the Family reboot.
Yeah, definitely. Have you ever read that first appearance of Lobo? I think it was Omega Men number 3.
No, I haven't. I've only heard like Keith Giffen talk about it.
Okay. I've never read it either. It was an expensive book back when like I was into Lobo, and I never got around to buying it. I think it was in like a Comixology sale recently, and I was just like, I don't even know if I want to read it.
Right.
But
so that brings me to
$20 exactly. Good job, Dave.
All right. Yeah. I feel like I won the lottery.
Somebody. So I've got a few returning favorites, and then some new, a couple of new series too. Well, not new series, but one new series that you said already. So I'll start with Clatuna number 1 by Jeff Lemire and Emmy Lennox. They had me just with the description of a brand new heartfelt superhero series. It's funny. I'm excited to read this. I have yet to read Descender, Lemire's series with Dustin Nguyen. And I love Dustin Nguyen's artwork, so I'm surprised that I haven't gotten around to reading that one yet.
Yeah, I'm definitely going to grab that in the next Image sale.
Yeah, that seems like something that would make for a good trade.
Yeah.
Yeah, like every Image series, I guess you could say.
Yeah, or any Vertigo series.
Right. And then staying in Image, I'm going to pick up Thrilling Adventure Hour Presents Beyond Belief number 2. By Ben Acker, Ben Blacker, and Phil Hester. This is number 2. Number 1 came out 18 weeks ago.
Wow.
That was like 4.5 months ago that we saw number 1. I was shocked to see that. I figured I had missed an issue, but then I was like, nope, this is number 2. So I haven't missed any issues. The first issue was fantastic, though. Completely captured the spirit, pun intended, of the Beyond Belief part of the Thrilling Adventure Hour podcast. And since there is no more Thrilling Adventure Hour as a podcast, it's nice to get the writing team behind it putting out these comics.
Yeah.
And now we're going to jump over to Marvel. No DC for me this week. And I'm picking up Age of Ultron versus Marvel Zombies number 4 by Robinson and Pugh, who talked about this already. I was shocked how quickly this issue came out. And it is the finale of it, which is kind of a bummer because Secret Wars, the main title, is getting delayed. We're not going to get the next issue until mid-September. I think it's coming out September 16th now, if I'm not mistaken. And we're supposed to get that earlier. But I feel like a lot of these Secret Wars tie-ins are going to be wrapping up well before the main series does, because they seem to be double shipping the tie-ins and delaying the main series.
Yeah. Well, you know, I like that they built in an extra month kind of
right.
for Secret Wars to be done in. And so I'm glad that we're going to get that before we start all the new series, and that we're not going to have another artist jump in, that it's all going to be by Asad Riddick.
Right. And then so I said Age of Ultron versus Marvel Zombies. The other Secret Wars tie-in is Thor's number 3. I am absolutely loving this comic. It's done as a like Law and Order type police procedural with, you know, the Thor Corps, which basically they're written here almost like a New York City homicide squad. It seems like watching an episode of Homicide, like watching this, because they're trying to solve the murder mystery of every Jane Foster on Battleworld. The interesting thing from the main Secret Wars series is that the Jane Foster female Thor is now hiding out as one of the Thor members of the Thor Corps. And I don't think anybody realizes that, you know, there is one Jane Foster alive, and she's the one that like is wanted by God Doom. So I'm not sure if that will play into this at all. That will just be resolved in the main series. And then finally, Miracle Man by Gaiman and Buckingham, number 1. This is obviously by Neil Gaiman and Mark Buckingham. It's a $5 comic, kind of pricey. I do wonder how accessible this will be for new readers. I had started reading the Miracle Man trades as they were coming out, because Marvel was reprinting the series in single issues. But I was like, I'll just wait for the trades, because the single issues were priced so high that I was like, this doesn't seem worth it to me.
Right.
And I only actually got through the first trade, so I'm a little behind on the series. So this is a book I really want to read, because this is basically like an unpublished Miracle Man story from the 1980s. Like, this is a comic that both these guys finished a while, decades ago, and it was just never put out.
Oh, okay. So I knew that they took over. So I knew that Marvel is reprinting the whole Miracle Man / Marvel Man run.
Right.
And that they just did Alan Moore's run, right?
Right.
And the next run is going to be of Neil Gaiman. Now, is this the Neil Gaiman stuff that has been printed before?
I think this is actually something that's never been printed before.
That's weird that they didn't like print the old stuff that hasn't been printed before.
Yeah,
that has been printed before doing the new stuff.
I agree. Now, I could be wrong about this. Maybe this is just the start of their run and it's not the unprinted comic, but I don't know. I have to look more into this.
Yeah, because I think they started their run but never finished it.
Right, that's true. Yeah, so that would be weird if they released the ending before they released the beginning. Hold on one second. Let me just look this
up. Right, because I feel like most people know about the series and know the story, but have never read it.
Right. Yeah, because the back issues, you know, there were only so many of them, and it just had like a legend about it. You know what, I take that, well, it says including material, you know what, I take it back. So it looks like this is the start of Gaiman and Buckingham's run after Moore left the series, because it's what was originally presented in Miracle Man number 17.
Okay.
Now it drops it from my 20.
I'm not
spending $5 on that, and that's good, because then I can get Deadpool versus Thanos number 1 by Tim Seeley and Elmo Bondoc. I didn't realize this. Like, I just love the idea of a Thanos versus Deadpool series. That just makes me laugh. And I didn't realize they actually share a love triangle with Lady Death, because you know, Thanos has been obsessed with Death as both a concept and as the female figure in the Marvel universe. And Deadpool was married to her for a bit of time, so that they neither one likes each other. I think because, like, you know, they view each other as the competition for Death's love.
Yeah, I had who's writing this?
Tim Seeley.
Yeah, I had listened to a
word balloon.
A word balloon with them. Did you listen to that?
I didn't, but I just took a guess.
yeah. you should listen to it. It's pretty funny. They were like, how did you come up with the series? And they were like, well, anytime Thanos is in the name of a comic, sales go up.
Right.
Anytime Deadpool is, sales go up. So we decided to put them together and see what kind of sales we get. And so it was, and that's kind of how they like were marketing it. Like they're like, they're not even like being bashful about, you know, that that is where the idea came from.
Right. But, like, you know, we want a really fat royalty check.
Right. But Tim Seeley was like, you know, obviously, you know, I'm proud of what we wrote, and you know, like it's played for laughs, and you know, like just like you would expect from a Deadpool comic.
Mm. Yeah, definitely. And I do like, that's what I like about Deadpool comics, is that they take these serious characters like Thanos and introduce like a level of humor that, you know, and it's funny because you talk to some comic book fans and they do not like that at all. Like I was talking to a guy who worked at a comic book store and he said he hated humor. Like, he's like, oh, I hate Deadpool. And I was like, why? I was like, and he's like, well, I just hate all funny comics. And I was like, that's like hating like funny movies. Like that's just, it just seems weird to me. Like I don't, yeah. He said, I don't like to laugh when I'm reading a comic book. And I was like, I'm just not going to talk to you anymore.
Yeah. I don't like to feel emotions when I'm reading something.
Right.
I just like the catalog.
Yeah. Like I think he was a big fan of just people punching each other.
Yeah. Is that your 20?
That is my 20. That is 1950. Actually, that is, I think, 1850, because that Deadpool comics is a dollar cheaper than the Miracle Man comic that I was almost tricked into buying if it wasn't for your intervention.
Ah, I'm glad I was able to steer you away for the time being.
Yeah, I appreciate that.
So what did you read this week?
Well, you know what? I actually watched something this week. I watched Justice League Gods and Monsters, the Bruce Timm movie.
Oh, how was that?
It is awesome. Let me tell you, you are going to love it. Like, it's a little jarring at first because this is an alternate universe Justice League, and it does not look like the Justice League. Like, it's Batman, Superman, and Wonder Woman, you know, the Trinity, but nothing about them really looks like the classic characters. Wonder Woman has changed the most. I don't want to spoil anything. I'm not going to go into their origins. Superman still comes from Krypton. His origin is changed, though, both before leaving Krypton and arriving on Earth. Batman is a different character in the Bat universe. On this planet, you know, the Waynes decided not to see Zara that night, and Bruce Wayne grew up with two parents. So Batman is somebody else, but is a Bat character, and Wonder Woman is the most different and the most obscure character. Like when I was first watching it, I thought she was created just for this show. And then they went into a featurette on like one of the special features saying like who that character was. And she is a DC character. And I bet she's a DC character you would recognize. But the other reason you would love it so much is that, well, it sticks to that classic Bruce Timm animation style. But it goes so deep with the number of characters involved. Like Michael Holt is here, Will Magnus is there, Dr. Silvana, John Henry Irons, I believe, is there too. Like all of the DC scientific community makes at least a minor appearance in it.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah. And it's a very, very cool movie, and they put a lot of thought into like basically rewriting these characters and then coming up with a new adventure for them. And if it sells well, I believe that it won't be like the final story with this version of the Justice League.
Wow, that's cool.
That was great. And so I give that, you know, 5 stars, highest recommendation. Definitely watch that. And then I did read a few comics. I read Deadpool Secret Wars #4, which concluded the Deadpool Secret Wars miniseries. And the great thing about this was that the whole concept of this was like Deadpool was in the original Secret Wars, but nobody remembers it. And it was so zany. Like in the second issue, he finds the shields that the action figures had that were never in the comic books. and, you know, he has like a torrid love affair with like the Wasp. And it in this issue, this final issue, it explains why no one remembers Deadpool as being in the story, which makes it kind of canon that he actually was in the original Secret Wars.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah. And so
it's not like just a joke comic then.
No, not at all. Like it is like, oh, you know, I don't want to give away the twist, but like, it's kind of like how Psycho Pirate is the only one that remembered pre-crisis DC Universe.
Oh, right.
Deadpool is the only one who remembers how things really went down in Secret Wars.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah. Yeah, and then I also read Secret Wars, Secret Love, number one. And that, basically because Michel Fife of Copra, who we talked about earlier in this episode, he both wrote and drew a story. So it was in, you know, that same style that he uses for Copra. And it was about, yeah, he's said in the past that he's a big fan of Innocenti and John Romita Jr.'s run of Daredevil from like the late 80s. And so this is set during that. It involves a love triangle between Karen Page, Typhoid Mary, and Matt Murdock, Daredevil. And it's the reason it was set during that run is that this is when Typhoid Mary was created. She was created by Innocenti and John Romita Jr. And this story itself takes place during the Inferno storyline. I don't remember, you know, if you remember that X-Men crossover where like the demons took over Manhattan. Like Limbo broke loose.
Yeah.
It is my favorite of X-Men crossovers, but it bled out into the entire Marvel universe. Like Spider-Man had some awesome issues drawn by Todd McFarlane. That's where like the Hobgoblin became the Demo Goblin because he became a demon. But and in that run on Daredevil, he did have to fight against these demons. So it was the devil versus the demons. And Fife puts this story like right in place there. And that was the first story, I believe, in the issue, and definitely the strongest one. The other highlight was Ms. Marvel, Kamala Khan, teaming up with the new Ghost Rider, the one who drives the car. And that was a cute story because it involved both of their side characters who have crushes on them and like the potential romance between those two superheroes and how it would affect those side characters. So overall, I'd say like Secret Wars, Secret Love, definitely a great book. It was a little pricey. It was a $5 price tag, but I loved it. And I think a lot of stores underordered it because it is going to a second printing that I believe should be out this week or next week.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, and then in Marvel Universe Unlimited app, I read Ultimates 1-4 of the Jonathan Hickman, Asad Ribic run. That's the Secret Wars creative team. And this is the one where, you know, a mysterious, like, technological group basically, like, wipes out, like, part of Eastern Europe and just, like, decimates the Ultimates from the beginning. And it turns out that it is Ultimate Reed Richards who's behind this, who was the bad guy in Ultimate Doom and that series of miniseries. So that's kind of what this was leading up to. I found those miniseries to be not great, but this run of Ultimates, definite must read. Like it is, if you're enjoying Secret Wars for the creative team, you'll definitely enjoy this.
Cool. Yeah. I slowed down on my Ultimate reading, but you know, I was reading Ultimates from the beginning.
Right.
All the Ultimate books, and rereading some and reading others for the first time. And so, yeah, I'm excited to get to that point.
Yeah, I think I missed out on this the first time around because Ultimates had just become such a tarnished team between Ultimatum and when Jeff Loeb and like Joe Madureira were on the series. Then like the Mark Miller stuff just wasn't holding up well either. And so I kind of was just like, I'm kind of sick of the Ultimates. I don't need to read this comic. You know, I've got the Marvel movies if I want to see the Ultimates.
Right.
But no, this is terrific. Definitely worth reading. And I think they were on the book for maybe 13 issues. I'm not sure.
Yeah. I don't think it was like a super long run.
No, but definitely like a year's worth of books.
Yeah. It's not like it's Fantastic Four.
Right. Yeah. Not like a multi-year spanning epic.
Right.
So what did you read?
Well, I started, I picked up Gotham by Midnight, which is by Ray Fox and with a new artist, Juan E. Ferreira.
Okay.
And that is the start of the post-convergence Gotham by Midnight.
Oh, interesting. So what changed due to convergence?
Just the art, really. and they were talking, because they're talking about like the, when in the first arc of Gotham by Midnight at the end, Spectre is released upon the city. And basically like, it looks like, you know, it's going to be like torn apart basically. Like he's God's wrath. And basically he's like, look, I'm going to destroy this city, much like God, you know, flooded the earth with Noah's Ark story, you know.
Yeah.
Because Gotham is such a horrible place. And
in the Spectre's defense, I think I agree with him.
Yeah, like you couldn't be like, well, you're wrong. You're like, no, this is awful. And Batman's doing a crappy job. And so basically, you know, he was, you know, kind of convinced to go back, to go away. But
and he was like, oh, just hear me out. I really think this is the right move here.
Right. So like now the internal affairs person who was watching after this basic X-Files unit of, you know, Gotham City Police Department.
Right.
And so him and all of Jim Corrigan's peers are part of his team are like, so you're the Spectre, you're like this is like an awful thing, like, and so they're like, why don't you just leave Gotham City if he's gonna come out? And he's like, I can't do that. Basically, my job is to solve the problem before the Spectre comes out. So he's like, that's why I'm here. Like, that's why I'm in the police department, because if I don't do anything, the Spectre comes out. So you guys need to work with me and help me solve this problem before the Spectre comes out. And I think that's like a really cool way to approach, you know, that relationship between Jim Corrigan and the Spectre.
Yeah, definitely.
You know, most of the time you see them like kind of working together where he's like, all right, now I'll become the Spectre, you know.
But, yeah, you know, or it's like a situation where it's kind of like the demon where, you know, he just like resents the Spectre.
Right, right. So, but here he's like doing everything he can to bring someone to justice before the Spectre comes out to take vengeance.
Yeah, that's an interesting twist on it. I feel like that's definitely like a new twist on that.
Yeah, yeah. And I picked up Justice League 3001 #1, which you had read a while back.
Yes.
And just really hilarious.
Yes.
Really funny. I think they're really hitting their stride with this book, which used to be Justice League 3000. We're seeing a lot more of the Giffen DeMattis Justice League appear mixed in with these classic Justice League characters who are more than a little bit off.
Yeah.
And so I really enjoyed that book. I also read DC Comics Bombshells #4-6, the digital versions, which will come out in print this week as Bombshells #2. It's written still by Marguerite Bennett. The art is by Laura Braga, Stephen Mooney, and Ted Nafe. And it was colored by Wendy Broom. And it's mainly, it looks like for the most part that it's not inked. It's done in that like style where they do the like, you know, the digital pencils or pencils that, you know, then, you know, go straight to coloring. And it looks really nice. Sometimes I don't feel like it sometimes I don't think that style is perfected. And the colors can overtake the pencils. I think when it was first being done on the Marvel books, like on I think they did it on Ultimate X-Men and they did it in like 1602. I felt like the effects that you could add in Photoshop, like the photorealistic effects, overshadowed some of the penciling and kind of took away from the actual art. But this is not doing that. And my favorite story has been Wonder Woman so far. It's a nice twist on her original origin. And you see she's best friends with Mera. And there's also a Stargirl and Power Girl story that I just like because I like those characters. But anybody who's a fan of like parallel universe DC stuff or in particular JSA World War II stuff, grab this book. Nice. And finally, I read Phonogram Volume 2, The Singles Club.
I did not get a chance to read that yet. So I have a question. Is it in color or is it also in black and white?
It's in color.
Oh, nice.
It's a quicker read, I felt, than the last book. And each chapter of the book, each single issue, is a different person's view on the night at a club.
Oh, interesting. That sounds fun.
And most of them are phonomancers or magician or magic people who derive their magic from music.
And is David back, the main character from the first series?
He is. David Cole is back. And it's still like Britpop references all over the place that, you know, I get some, I don't get all of them. I feel like if they wrote, like, they did the same book with, like, indie, like, American indie music references, like, you know, Neutral Milk Hotel, you know, like, you know, and any of that kind of stuff, that, like, I would be all over this book. I'd be like, this is brilliant, you know, because I'd get all the jokes a little better or all the nods. But I don't, and so it's just an okay book. I think it's better than the last book, but it still has that translation problem. If you're not really, really into British culture, especially music, you know, like if you've watched The Office and Doctor Who, like it doesn't cut it.
Right.
You know? If you know who Belle and Sebastian is, doesn't cut it, you know. So it was a good read. I liked it better than the first volume, but still there was, you know, just a lack of understanding of the material he was referencing. You know, if you had purchased this, I wouldn't say don't read it because it's a quick read, but
yeah, I have purchased it. I am looking forward to reading it.
Yeah, and so
You know, and I talked about this last week where Phonogram just didn't appeal to me the same way that The Wicked and the Divine did, just which kind of like slowed me down as far as like getting into volume two.
Right. Yeah. So I'm going to start volume one of Wicked and Divine this week.
Oh, nice. I think you'll like that a lot.
Yeah. So I guess that's that.
Nice. Yeah. So that's all the new books we have. And then that's everything. Yeah. So, Gotham, we were talking about that earlier as one of the shows that's coming back. Season one, if people haven't watched that, is coming out on DVD in September and Blu-ray. Warner was nice enough to send me a copy of season one Blu-rays. And I'm like, oh, kind of want to just like zip through these.
Yeah. I mean, you can zip through them. You could do other stuff while you're watching them.
Yeah,
there's
like,
maybe
like The Wire where you have to pay attention to everything.
Right. There's a handful of episodes that you'll probably like be pulled into, but I would say like for the most part you could kind of cruise through them.
I think you're right. It just means having them on the TV for, you know, 1,000 minutes or however long.
Right.
So I guess that does bring us to the end of the podcast. Dave, thanks for another awesome episode. Everybody else, thanks for listening.
Yeah, thanks, guys.
Yeah. And we'll see you here next week. episode 88. I feel like 88 should be a special episode, just because, you know, it's two eights put together.
Yeah. Infinity times two.
Yeah, exactly. It's going to be a super long episode. Just kidding. We're doing a good job of keeping things to about an hour.
That's yeah.
Welcome to the About an Hour podcast. Five times shorter than Comic Vine. Good night, everyone. Have an awesome Tuesday night.